Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this Sunday, April 29th, 2018. As I discuss the world of sports and pop culture, as always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to my Instagram page and follow me at Willow Gerald Quinn. A basketball and NFL heavy program tonight, as we had a game seven and a couple of game sevens this weekend. Also a couple of dominating performances by the prohibited favorites in the Western Conference, probably in the NBA right now, in terms of Golden State and Houston. But we begin with the Cleveland Cavaliers, who live to see another day, live to see at least four more games, if you're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, of the career of LeBron James in a Cleveland Cavaliers uniform. They get by the Indiana Pacers 105-101, a very highly competitive game. I thought that the Pacers really are going to be kicking themselves this summer. Yeah, because they had opportunity at the end of the third quarter, down by two, LeBron out of the game with cramps. And from that time on, he didn't come back into the game until around the 8:25 mark of the fourth quarter. He comes back, they have an 8-point lead. He leads with a 2-point lead. He comes back, they have an 8-point lead. And also, you had the first couple minutes of that quarter, no Victor Oladipo on the court, which I did not understand from Nate McMillan's perspective what he was thinking in regards to that. Did not get to see the entire post-game presser from McMillan. I saw part of it, but I'm sure I will hope to think somebody would ask him on why Victor Oladipo started the fourth quarter out on the bench with no LeBron James in the game. I just think, to me, it just made no sense. 26 years old, this is game seven. You have a golden opportunity with the other team's best player off the court, not on the court, to take advantage of that and put them in a, maybe you have a 5 or 6 point lead by the time he returns. So thought that was a mistake by Nate McMillan. Also, everybody's giving Ty Lue, a pat on the back for going to Tristan Thompson in game seven. Of course, Thompson had 15 points, 10 rebounds, a couple of blocks, really was the second man leading the charge for Cleveland, as finally LeBron James got some help from Thompson, Love, George Hill had a big second half. J.R. Smith knocked down a couple threes, but it was Tristan Thompson that did most of the damage from start to finish for Cleveland. But I'm not going to pat Ty Lue on the back for making that move. That's a move that you probably could have made two or three games ago. Like, where's Tristan Thompson? Tristan Thompson been all series long against the Indiana team that had been killing them with killing them down low in terms of points in the paint. And even in today's game, they outscored Cleveland 44-30 in terms of points in the paint. So, not ready to give Ty Lue the proverbial great coaching call, a great adjustment for a move that should have been made, probably a week ago, or even, probably after games, probably at least after the first, after game two or after game three, definitely when they were down two games to one, and when following that game three, the Friday before last. So, again, Cleveland survives. Again, you see, LeBron James just dominate a game seven. You look at his game seven numbers throughout the course of his career. Even in defeats, he's put up some phenomenal numbers. Becomes the first player in NBA history to record two 40-point games in a game seven. Now, Paul Pierce does have two 40-point games in a decisive game. You remember, he had 45 against LeBron in game seven, 2008 I think it was the second round of playoffs. And in 2002 against Allen Iverson, he had 46 in a decisive game five, but that was not a game ever. Back in 2002, that was the last year where that was the last year of best of fives in the first round, which I frankly think they should go back to myself. But, you know, money, you know, advertisers, things of that nature, they won't ever go back to that. But I like the best of five format in the first round. I prefer that format than the best of seven in the first round. But that's why Paul Pierce is not, you know, that's why for Celtic fans out there, who are going to bring up the fact that Paul Pierce had multiple 40-point games in a decisive game. Neither, both of those performances did not come in game seven. So, Indiana, Cleveland moves on. Indiana goes home. You'll have Toronto and Cleveland come Tuesday night in Toronto, a game that if Toronto can't win that game, they're not going to win any game in the series. It should be a, you know, that should be an easy game for Toronto to win with a Cleveland team coming off such a quick turnaround, having to travel in Toronto. They'll have a home court. Toronto has to win that game to have any chance in the series. As far as Indiana goes, you know, listen, Oladipo has a chance to be a big time player for a long time. He has a chance to make a lot of all-star teams. You enjoy how he conducted himself even during the press conferences. His demeanor, and he's a guy that's going to be around for a long time. 30 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists in a game 7. His first game 7, especially as a leading player on the team. And he did nothing to disappoint after getting off to a relatively slow start, had a big third quarter. And like I said, I think Nate McMillan made a huge mistake in terms of keeping him on the bench in the first couple minutes of that fourth quarter. So I think that's something that will stick with Indiana for the rest of the summer. What could have been, you know, they go into the fourth quarter with down by 2 and probably should have been up. Probably in, you know, and not having LeBron James, you know, basically have LeBron James miss better part of 4.5 minutes worth of game time, last minute of the third quarter and the first 3.5 minutes of the fourth quarter, and still not be able to take advantage of it and actually lose points and go down further. So that is where Indiana lost this game. They got knocked around on the offensive glass. Give Tristan Thompson a lot of credit. Give George Hill a lot of credit. George Hill had been out for the last couple games with the bad back. Had been out for has some back trouble. Comes off the bench with 8 minutes. You know, in the second half, didn't even play the first half. They had a big second half in terms of getting to the free throw line. His defense made a couple plays. This was about putting LeBron James' performance aside, which was again spectacular, as he has been in over the course of his career in game sevens and in elimination games in general. But this was about the production, finally getting production out of one Tristan Thompson. 347-215-6180. When we return, we'll talk about the Western powerhouses as they were able to dominate in the weekend in the NBA as well. That's coming up on this latest edition of The Real Deal Podcast. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of The Real Deal Podcast with Samuel General Quinn, taking you to around 8:45 as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. Again, a heavy NBA weekend. We'll talk more about the NFL draft as it concluded yesterday, especially about Washington's picks and just some of the interesting occurrences that took place in the draft. But it was definitely a weekend that was dominated with the NBA and the NFL as well. Of course, you had Houston. You had a game 7. You had Houston just basically toying with the Utah Jazz. You knew Utah was going to have a lot of trouble in this game. Again, coming off a quick turnaround, coming off a Friday win against Oklahoma City. And also the fact that they have no Ricky Rubio for probably the next 10 days. So I'm guessing if there is a game, you know, like game 5, he could possibly come back, you know, somewhere around there. 5 or 6 if it goes that far. Certainly, from the looks of how it went today, it looked like this series could be a 4, at best, five game series. Listen, Utah just has not just have enough offensive weapons to deal with Houston. You have to be able to score at least anywhere from 105 to 110 points to deal with Houston, because Houston's going to score. That's all they're doing. Houston's going to score. They have a bunch of 3-point shooters. They have a lot of ways they can get buckets. You know, with those pick and rolls they're running with the Harden and Capella. So they have a number of guys. They have anywhere from 4 to 5 guys that can get you 20 on a given night. Harden, Gordon, and Chris Paul could get you 30 on a given night. So you got to be able, you're not going to shut Houston. You're not going to shut Houston down defensively. You have to be able to put some points on the board and just hope and just chase their 3-point shooters off the 3-point line. So Utah's going to have a difficult time in this series, especially if Rubio can't come back soon. I don't think even with Rubio, Houston will have much of a chance. But they look. It seems like they will be that they are overmatched in that particular series. As far as last night went, everything basically went according to plan with the home team taking care of business. But I don't think anybody expected Golden State to absolutely just manhandle the New Orleans Pelicans. And here's what I'll say about that game. First of all, Golden State reminded you of who, if you forgot who they were. That's number one. And, you know, I heard a lot of talk leading up to that game. Not surprising, about the matchup, and, you know, Golden State couldn't beat New Orleans without Steph Curry, who didn't play last night, and, you know, no matchup for Anthony Davis. What are they gonna do with Drew Holiday and so on and so on? And I'm like, they swept Portland. Okay, a Portland team that has had minimum minus a Damian Lillard, you know, series winning jump shot to beat take out Houston a couple years ago, but a team that has, you know, barely gotten to the playoffs the last couple of years, basically been one round and out, and has had, you know, minimum postseason success. They manhandled them, but you go from Portland to Golden State, and it's just a different level of basketball. And, you know, Golden State has been hearing for the last couple of weeks about how vulnerable they are, about how much they need Steph Curry, about, you know, this, that, and the third. It was only a matter of time before Golden State had this type of performance to remind you that they're still Golden State. That's still the team to beat in the NBA, now in the Western Conference, and not only the NBA, the Western Conference, but the entire league. Okay. Steph Curry is coming back probably in game 2, even though I would think about holding him out to game 3. But he almost played last night. I really thought that he was going to play last night, but Curry held him out. But again, that was a performance to remind you that they're still Golden State. And if you're in New Orleans, you don't just go from making the playoffs, being a team that barely make the playoffs after 3 years, to all of a sudden challenging Golden State. There are steps of progression that teams have to go through. Playing against Golden State, they're going to have a difficult time from the standpoint of they want to play with pace, which is right up Golden State's alley. And again, I don't think those guys, and again, for them to have any chance to make this series competitive, Anthony Davis has to be the best player on the court by far. Last night he was not. Last night he probably was the fourth best player on the court behind the likes of Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and also Klay Thompson. He has to be by far and away the best player on the court for Golden State, for New Orleans to have a chance in the series. Up until that point, he had been the best player in the playoffs, even better than LeBron. But last night he was mediocre for him with those numbers. Draymond Green was great. Durant did what he does, and Klay Thompson did what he, you know, Klay Thompson had a big game as well. But this is a completely different level of class as far as New Orleans goes, and I don't expect this series. Maybe they can stretch out to a six game, maybe, but this is looking like a 5-game series, and we're looking like we're headed towards a Golden State Houston showdown in terms of for the Western Conference Finals. As far as Milwaukee Boston, nothing surprising about that game. That was a classic home court game where Boston jumped on top. Milwaukee, you know, made a couple of runs, but never really threatened Boston. You never got the sense that Boston was not going to win that game. We know what Boston has done over the course of their celebrated history in Game 7s at the Boston Garden. Milwaukee is a job that will be coveted by many because of the Greek Freak and because of some of the pieces that they have. I think they have to get rid of Jabari Parker. I don't think you can keep him on the team. So it'll be very interesting to see what they do in the offseason. But there's no question they will have a new head coach come next year. As far as Boston goes, we're going to get the mat. We are going to get, this is going to be the beginning of an epic rivalry. I think it's going to be on the horizon with Philadelphia and Boston. Now, again, Boston does not have all their players. It could be, who knows how long Jaylen Brown could be out. Nothing's officially came out yet, but he pulled a hamstring. We already saw how that affected Rubio. These hamstrings, like high ankle sprains, can be tricky. It mostly depends on the player and depends on the player in terms of how fast they're going to heal up. But that would be a devastating blow for an already depleted Boston Celtic team that's already missing its two best players in Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. You want to see Boston at full capacity with Jaylen Brown. They're playing against a team that is vastly superior to them in terms of talent. You like Boston's getting Boston's culture, their coaching, but Philadelphia clearly goes in as the prohibited favorite in that series. But again, I think Boston will fight, claw, scrape. I can see, I would not be surprised if that series went to six games. I don't see it going past six games. So we'll see what happens with that. You'll have that kickoff tomorrow night. We'll have game two of Golden State, New Orleans tomorrow night in the nightcap. When we return, we will have tonight's headlines, and we'll get into some NFL draft coming up on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Hello to YouTube out there, my YouTube audience. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Tonight's headlines: Washington takes out Pittsburgh 4-1. They will even up the series at a game apiece before they travel down to Pittsburgh. You have, of course, Cleveland and Houston. Cleveland advancing to the second round with a 105-101 victory over the Indiana Pacers. You have Houston 110-96 easily over a seemingly tired Utah Jazz team. So we'll see what Utah can bring in game two. I expect a much better performance out of Utah in game two. I think they'll be a little bit fresher. You know, sometimes it is coming off this tough game six against Oklahoma City. Traveling, got to make that transition from, really got to change your mindset from one opponent such to the next. And you know, Houston, Oklahoma City couldn't be vastly different opponents for different animals for the Utah Jazz to deal with. Two completely different styles of play and philosophies in terms of how those two teams play. So trying to adjust to that on the fly, little rest. It was going to be, I saw this game coming a mile away in terms of Houston being able to just manhandle Utah. Even if Rubio would have played, I would have thought Utah would have had a difficult time in this game. So Carmelo Anthony comes out and basically says in an exit interview yesterday on Saturday, and Oklahoma City, of course, was eliminated on Friday and had all the exit interviews come on Saturday. Basically, Carmelo just says he's not coming off the bench, and that's not even an issue. Like, that's not even a question. You know, that he's made all the necessary sacrifices, you know, moving away from his family. He has a young child in New York. moving, living by itself, things of, you know, things of that nature. And if you are Oklahoma City, you are basically right now stuck with that contract for another year, a guy who's clearly aging, who's clearly on decline for $28 million. The one interesting thing Carmelo said about Oklahoma City, it was a very fair point, and it made perfect sense, was the standpoint of that, you know, there was no real plan in regards to bringing him to Oklahoma City. Remember, this was done in September. Training camp basically maybe it might have been a week before training camp that he was brought in, and he basically called out the organization, Sam Presti, for not having a real plan in terms of when, you know, bringing him in and how he was going to be used, how he was going to be utilized. Remember, Carmelo, there was a lot of talk that Carmelo was going to end up with the Houston Rockets. A lot of talk. And, you know, for most of the summer, people were talking about it was going to be the Houston Rockets that he ended up with. So, you know, if you're Oklahoma City, I think you have to move him. If he's not going to come off the bench, I think you absolutely have to move him or try to move him, because you have a catastrophe on your hands with no Paul George, who I don't expect to resign there, and a disgruntled and whiny Carmelo Anthony. So that you cannot bring back next year. If you are the Oklahoma City Thunder, who already, again, they have culture issues. And I mentioned this on Friday, or I mentioned this on Saturday morning with a couple of Facebook posts. Yeah, they have a Russell Westbrook issue with his style of play. And I don't think you can, you know, I don't think you can build a team, a championship team around him. I think you can build a team and they can get to the playoffs and maybe you can get to the second round. But I don't think you can build a championship caliber team around Westbrook. But Oklahoma City has a culture problem, because they spent the last couple of years basically beholden to Russell Westbrook in terms of the triple doubles and things of that nature. He resigns there. He can do whatever he wants. He basically has the keys to the kingdom. Okay. So they are so beholden to him that it doesn't, you know, allow for, you know, it doesn't allow for things to go the way they should go within the organization. And that is, hey, we're going to draft and develop talent. We're going to pick a philosophy, pick a style of play. Oklahoma's identity was basically, you know, Russell is your turn, Paul is your turn, Carmelo, you're going to be a spot up standstill shooter. Three-point shooter, which is just not his game at this stage in his career now. So I don't think the culture. I think Oklahoma City has to get back to drafting and developing talent. Remember, this is a franchise that drafted Kevin Durant. They drafted James Harden. They drafted Russell Westbrook. They drafted Steven Adams. They drafted Serge Ibaka. So they know how to draft players, and they know how to develop talent as well. They knew how to develop talent. Andre Robertson, guys like that. You know, got Steven Adams, some guys that even, you know, those guys have gotten better. They got to get back to that, because clearly throwing together free agents and former All-Stars, this thing did not work out. It was an experiment from the beginning, but they have to, you know, you have to bring in a coach who can challenge Russell Westbrook on basically altering his style of play. You can't have your best player in playoff games taking 43, 39, and 43 shots. It just can't happen. And you expect to advance in a playoff round against the competition that you have in the Western Conference. Golden State is not going anywhere for the foreseeable future. You have some up-and-coming teams that could be on the horizon. Denver's going to be a very good team. The Lakers are going to be close to a playoff caliber team next year. So the Western Conference, San Antonio, I think the Kawhi situation is going to get rectified, if I had to guess, and he'll be back in San Antonio. They'll be right back there next year. So again, Oklahoma City has a lot of decisions to make in the offseason. Sam Presti's going to earn his money without question in the offseason. And again, I'm assuming that Paul George is going to leave. I would start by either, by trying to move Carmelo Anthony and going from there. I would not bring back Billy Donovan as my coach, even though he's going to be, he sounds like, haven't heard any rumblings that he would be let go, but I would not. Billy Donovan does not command any respect. He, you know what, when players talk about Billy Donovan, it sounds like they say a lot of things they used to say about Scott Brooks. They like him. He's a player's coach, so on and so on. You can read between lines. That means he has no control over the team, and you got their star player, Russell Westbrook, basically calling the shots and doing what he wants to do. So that's how I took it with some of the exit interviews I heard from Oklahoma City, in particular Russell Westbrook, in terms of his relationship with Billy Donovan. 347-215-6180 is the call number. We will get on. We will talk about the NFL draft that's coming up, and much more on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. We'll be right back. Maybe I'll get into it. I'd rather talk about it with some other people that saw it as well. So there might be a chance that I'm not going to give away any spoilers. So don't worry about that. If I do talk about it, but I did see Avengers. Of course, it already is breaking records. $250 million this weekend, topping the Star Wars, The Force Awakens, for most money made, for highest grossing movie in this first weekend. Of course, that came out, 2015, about 2 or 3 years ago. So it's already $250 million. Panther made, the Black Panther made, I think, $202 million opening weekend. So Avengers is going to be, it is going to do, it's going to be one of the highest grossing movies of all time. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. As far as the draft goes, it was funny, before we did a program talking about the draft and talking about how easy of the decisions that it should have been for the Cleveland, Cleveland Browns. Like, you draft the potential franchise quarterback in Sam Darnold, and you draft the game changing defensive end pass rusher in terms of Bradley Chubb. And lo and behold, the Cleveland Browns draft neither one of them. The Baker Mayfield draft pick, I'm telling you right now, is going to look like one of the dumbest picks in terms of a court number one pick in recent memory. I mean, it really is. This guy was the third or fourth rated quarterback in the draft. People like Sam Darnold, Bettermore, people like Josh Rosen, people like Josh Allen. I mean, how you take a guy because of, and I keep hearing this mojo or swag that he has. I don't hear about what throws he can make or intangibles in terms of leadership and winning, some things of that nature. I don't hear about that. Well, I don't hear about the history of, Big 12 quarterbacks or Oklahoma quarterbacks outside of Bradford, who have just flamed out in the NFL. And even Bradford Bradford can play when he's healthy. The problem is he can't stay healthy. But again, the idea that Cleveland, with two of the top four picks, can find a way to screw it up again. I guess we should not have been surprised. I guess we shouldn't have been surprised at all by that. I understand how important a defensive back, cornerback is in today's NFL, but they're not. You get a chance to get a pass rusher who some people thought should have been drafted as high as two. Some people thought that Chubb should have went to the Giants. And they take him and they pass up on him and basically give Denver a gift. You're going to put Chubb next to Von Miller. That defensive line, that defensive line is going to be unblockable for the next 3 or 4 years. I know Von Miller is not the player he once was, but he's still a top five pass rusher in this league. I know at one time he was the dominant pass rusher in this league, but he's still top five. without question. He's going to get a lot of pressure taken off him with Chubb lining up alongside Chubb. I watched Chubb. He is a big time player. He is a game changing defensive end. Again, you could have made the case that Chubb could have been the number one pick. At worst, number two. So I don't know what, again, Cleveland, Dorsey, again, this does not surprise me at all with Cleveland. It just doesn't. And I don't care about their second or third round picks. I understand they took some people, got a couple guys, Chubb, and I don't really care about their second, third round picks. If you can't get first round picks, if you can't get the first round picks right, what confidence should we have, or should anybody have, especially if you're a Cleveland fan, about your second and third and fourth round picks? So, typical Cleveland, making it harder than it had to be. To me, it was very simple. You take the quarterback, you take Darnold, you take Chubb. It was very simple for me. But leave it up to the Browns to, again, mess up a draft and when they had two of the top four picks. As far as Washington goes, they went heavy defense. You knew they would go heavy defense. Taking the kid out of Bama, De'Ron Payne. They get Geis out of LSU as far as he probably will be their starting running back next year. He'll take some pressure off some of the guys. They'll take some pressure. You know, can take some pressure off Alex Smith. They, again, get a couple of defensive players. They get five out of their seven draft picks were defensive players. I know they had a couple of late round picks. I'm interested because a lot of guys are not high on the Penn State safety. But I think that, you know, I have no issue with the Payne pick, but Derwin James was sitting there for Washington to take. And there are a lot of teams, I think, that there's always one guy in the draft that gets passed up and then he goes out there and makes a lot of teams look stupid. I look at the draft this year, I think Derwin James is going to be that guy. That guy was a game changer at the safety and basically, you know, can be a safety in the box, can line up in the box, can probably play some linebacker. He's that new breed of hybrid player that you need to cover tight ends to help stop the run. He is that type of player. And again, I don't see how and why so many teams passed up on him. A guy who was talked about as being even a top seven, top eight pick, definitely a top 10 pick. How he fell below 10, I don't know. I know San Diego got an absolute steal by getting him, a steal. You put him along with Casey Hayward with what they already have with the pass rush with Ingram and Bosa. And that San Diego team, again, I don't, you know, we say this every year. We say this a lot of times about their talent. A San Diego team will be a player in the AFC. I think they will. I think their talent is undeniable. Rivers still is good enough. We know the kind of weapons they have with Gordon and with some of the receivers on the outside. So I think that team is going to be a team to be. And they already had a good defense this year. I mean, their defense was very good this year. They just, again, continued to doing dumb San Diego stuff to lose as many close games as they did. But I think Derwin James is going to be one of these guys that we're going to be looking back on and saying that there's no way that guy should have went 17th in the draft. Again, you don't know about how these picks are going to, how these picks are going to turn out. Again, as far as Washington goes, they address their necessary needs as far as the defensive line, as far as the running back situation, and some offensive line depth. They take the guy in the third round, Garon Christian, out of Louisville, at the tackle position. Again, we don't know how long Trent Williams. You know, who knows about Trent Williams in the future. Not getting any younger, still a good player, but not getting any younger. I don't know what to make about their late round picks, 6-5 and beyond, depending on what service you look at. A couple people like them, a couple don't. Who knows? We'll never see. We'll never know until those guys actually get on the field. So, but in terms of the draft, again, you see Derwin James goes at 17th. You see Lamar Jackson goes to Baltimore at the third with the 32nd pick. There are a lot of New England fans who are whining about Belichick passing up and not taking a quarterback. We'll see how that plays out. He did address some other needs. I don't understand why and what would make Seattle take a running back in the first round with so many defensive needs that they have with all the players that they lost. I just don't get that. Taking a running back. I understand they have some issues at the running back position, but this draft was so deep with running backs, you could have waited until the second, third round to take a running back. That's the thing about the Giants and the Saquon Barkley pick. You get a top five pick. This draft was loaded with running backs. Giants, again, passing up on Darnold, passing up on Chubb. I understand, passing up on Chubb in particular. I get the philosophy that clearly they didn't believe that any of these quarterbacks were franchise guys and were worthy of number two pick. I get that. If you are not completely sold on a quarterback, don't just take a quarterback, just take a quarterback. But to me, the next best thing is a premium pass rusher, which was sitting right there with Bradley Chubb and the Giants at the number two pick. These running backs have short shelf lives, and I like Saquon Barkley. I think Barkley's going to be Saquon Barkley. I like Barkley a lot. I think he's going to be a good player, but a running back has a short shelf life, and to waste a top five pick on a running back who might have four or five prime years versus a quarterback who could be in the league for 10 years or versus a defensive end who could be in the league for 10 to 12 years. I just don't think that's valued for a number two pick. So we'll see what happens with that. Lamar Jackson is going to be the heir apparent to one Joe Flacco with the Baltimore pick. And again, if you're taking Lamar Jackson at the end of the first round, I'm not high on Lamar Jackson, but, if you're going to take him, I would have took him as a second or third round pick. But Baltimore, Ozzie Newsome, Baltimore, they've had some good, decent drafts in the past. They clearly think they can groom this guy to be their quarterback of the future. I'm not as high on him as others are. A lot of people thought he was even going to go higher, that people were going to be trading up in the 10 to 15 range to get him. He still goes in the first round. You have five quarterbacks going in the first round. Rudolph goes in the third round. So, again, it's going to be very interesting to see how these quarterbacks do, considering that no one was high on any of them to be a guaranteed can't miss franchise quarterback. It just goes to show you how desperate teams get about the quarterback position to have five quarterbacks going in a draft where there was no clear cut number one. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Of course, I'm on YouTube. You can catch this episode is in its entirety, probably about 15 to 20 minutes after. In terms of Blog Talk Radio, you can catch it in a couple of hours. In a couple of hours, we are also on iTunes at apple.itunes.com. We've got Real Deal Podcast. And we'll be posting on various platforms in terms of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, as well as in terms of best of and replays of this podcast. So you can find me you can find me. 347-215-6180. A couple of minutes here on this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. We began talking about the NBA playoffs. LeBron James still has never lost a first-round series. The Cleveland Cavaliers to a 105-101 victory over the Indiana Pacers. LeBron went with 48. Seems he went for 45-7-9 or 45-7-8 Don't get how many assists he had. I know he had 45, but again, regardless, it was another just off the charts performance by LeBron in a game seven. He's had some legendary games, had some legendary elimination game performances throughout the course of his career. But this game was, even with that, that would not matter if not for the performances of Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, especially, Thompson in the first half, Love in the fourth quarter. Love hit some big shots in the fourth quarter when LeBron James left the game with cramps. He was out from the last minute of the third quarter and up until the 8:25 minute mark of the fourth quarter. You had big performances out of Thompson, big performances out of George Hill and Kevin Love. So LeBron gets just enough help to get by, and I mean just get by a game Indiana Pacers team that has, some nice pieces on it, has a budding star in Victor Oladipo, who had 30, 12, and 6, had a big third quarter. But again, I mentioned this at the top of the program, Nate McMillan and the Pacers organization will be proud of this season, but they have to be kicking themselves this summer when they look back on that game. And you had no LeBron James for roughly 3.5 or 4.5 minutes of game time, and you have no Victor Oladipo on the floor for the first 2 or 3 minutes of the fourth quarter, which to me made absolutely zero sense whatsoever. But that's a story. That's something that they can focus on in the offseason. Cleveland advances. You had Houston cruising past Oklahoma City, excuse me, cruising past Utah 110 to 96. Harden goes for 41. You had PJ Tucker had a nice game. Chris Paul played well. I guess a Utah team that had to be tired coming off a quick turnaround after a Friday win, late night win over Oklahoma City, and having to fly out there and basically transition to another series. We'll see how they respond. We'll see how they respond. Come to, I believe they play next Tuesday, this Tuesday coming up. It was game two of that series. So, excuse me, Wednesday. Wednesday. Wednesday will be game two of the Utah Houston series. Game one, Sixers will be back in action after a couple of days off in game one against Boston, and you also have game two with Golden State against New Orleans, as New Orleans looks to get back to get off the schneid and tie that series at one. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I will see you next time. I'm out.